Hey, and welcome to your Money in the Bank reaction show. We're going to get to my thoughts on last night's Money in the Bank show, and it's not going to be full top to bottom review. I'll save that for tomorrow night, but I had to come on, and I have to give you guys my thoughts. If you've been following my Twitter feed, you have an idea of how I feel, so this one should be quite an interesting show on a lot of levels. So all I have to say is just buckle up, and here we go.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, guys, welcome to the show. And yeah, we're here for some Money in the Bank talk. We're here to talk about last night's fiasco because there's a lot to say. And, you know, here's the thing. If you've been a listener of my show, you know where I'm going with this. If you're new and you're easily offended or think this is an attention-seeking podcast, then you may be sadly disappointed or you may be triggered by this. Either way, this should be a very interesting show because this is not an attention garnering show. I mean, we all want downloads, but if you know me and you've been a listener of the show, you know that I am authentic to the core with my opinions. Whether you think they're attention seeking or not doesn't really matter because my opinions are exactly what I feel and they're not anything more or less. So I just wanted to put that out there because, you know, I've been a wrestling fan for 23 years now, almost exactly. And I've seen a lot of stuff, right? Through 23 years, I've seen a lot of great stuff, a lot of legendary stuff, a lot of mediocre stuff, a lot of bad stuff, a lot of embarrassing things. A lot of things that didn't work, and I give WWE credit for at least trying. But last night, and I'm specifically talking about the Money in the Bank ladder matches. I'm not talking about the rest of the pay-per-view, which as a whole I enjoyed. I will say that up front, and I'll talk just a little bit on some of the things I did like a little bit later in the show, because there is some positive to come out of this. So I don't want people to think that I'm throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, where just because the last two matches weren't exactly favorable in my eyes, that I completely bombed the pay-per-view rating in my eyes, right? That's not the case because, like, by and large, I did enjoy the pay-per-view on a lot of levels. And then came the Money in the Bank ladder matches. And it was, you know, like I said, I've been watching wrestling for over two decades, and I have never, ever seen a wrestling match, if you even want to call it that, more eye-rolling community theater wrapped into a Looney Tunes Saturday morning special than I did last night. And many of you may say, oh, that was so entertaining. It was the best part of last night. At least they're, you know, trying to be entertaining. No, 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 no. How they're entertaining are by the following factors. Number one, plausibility. Number two, believability. And number three, storytelling. And storytelling successfully. WWE last night decided to put everything that is wrong with professional wrestling in a single match. Everything. Was it plausible? No. Was it believable? Absolutely not. Was it a story being told? No. No, there wasn't. It was everything that you, if you're a wrestling fan that came from the Attitude Era, even came from the Ruthless Aggression Era, you should be looking at this in disgust. And those of you that are out there that are saying that this is WWE trying to entertain us, it's something different. No. WWE is, they are trying something different, but they're trying what they want to be identified as and running away from their identity as a professional wrestling company. This made the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match look like Flair Steamboat. I mean, this to me was a tragedy of professional wrestling presentation. This was a complete mitigated embarrassment as a wrestling fan that I had to sit through that. I expected there would be some implausibilities. Probably camera angles where there shouldn't be. I get it. But to go through what we did last night, and we'll break it down, was nothing short of a tragedy and a slap in the face insult to professional wrestling itself, because it wasn't pro wrestling. It was entertainment only, or at least a poor attempt at entertainment. They took Otis and made him exactly what Vince McMahon envisions him as. A bowl full of jelly, working man that does have some comedic timing, no doubt. No doubt he does. But they reduced him to a food-mongering catchphrase of, "Ooh, yeah!" This guy chose food over going after the briefcase. Stopped in the little cafeteria that they have, and then proceeded to chow down on whatever food was there, as well as in the break room or whatever area they were with Paul Heyman, who was at basically a Thanksgiving table, about to eat a sandwich, and it turned into one of the worst. This was probably the worst part of the whole thing, right? When I don't remember who it was because my brain is starting to tune this out. Somebody screamed "food fight." So now, not only is this implausible by even getting to the floor and everyone is running single file behind one another like it's the 24/7 championship, but then you have somebody yell "food fight" like they're in a high school cafeteria. You talk about diminishing the importance of this match, about the risk, the risk is worth the reward, right? You've got to be kidding me. That everyone gets distracted by a juvenile food fight. Oh, that's just entertainment. You're overanalyzing it. You're taking the fun out of it. Then I don't know what you expect. Like, what do you want from pro wrestling? And you could argue this is better than anything they did all night or anything that's happened. Those of you that think that last night was the most entertaining, or that the Money in the Bank ladder match was entertaining, that the Firefly Funhouse was entertaining, the best part of WrestleMania, clearly have not lived through the Attitude Era. And I know I keep saying that as the standard, but here are the facts. The fact is WWE has never generated more money from a television standpoint and a gate attendance standpoint, not sponsorship or contracts with TV networks, because we all know what the $1 billion deal with Fox, than they did during the 1990s, late 90s, early 2000s. Never. What happened during that time? Yeah, there was some bad comedy. There was some sex. But by and large, what drove that success to record highs? What did it? Perhaps it was the believability of a cast of characters that felt authentic and stories you cared about and things didn't feel like a joke. Perhaps it was that. Or perhaps it was the silly, nonsensical bra and panties match that honestly was there to spike a rating in the male demographic. But ultimately, the success in ticket sales came from Stone Cold, came from The Rock, came from Undertaker, came from Triple H, Mick Foley, Edge and Christian, the Hardy Boys. It came from guys like that, that were there as believable characters that delivered a kick-ass match, that cared about the outcomes, were fighting for championships, didn't stop to do a stupid-ass food fight and actually were invested in the journey that they were on. You cared about their journey. Now, this is the most haphazard, disgusting presentation of pro wrestling. And again, this is not all of WWE. This is what they think the fans want based on, unfortunately, the reactions that they got to the Boneyard match and to the Firefly Funhouse at WrestleMania. And I was fearful. I went in with an open mind, folks. I went in with an open mind to this match. I said, I'm not going to prejudge it. I know there'll probably be things that make no sense. But I said, let's give it a chance. And I did. And I was severely disappointed. I was embarrassed. Like, those are the segments that make me feel embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. I can't put it any plainer than that. You can't tell me, if you had a friend over that occasionally watched wrestling or knew about it but wasn't really sure about watching it, that if you sat them down last night and you watched the pay-per-view together, that they wouldn't have been completely turned off by that nonsensical community theater cartoon presentation of what they think wrestling is. And I don't even think they would say, this isn't wrestling, this isn't pro wrestling, this isn't pro wrestling or wrestling, it's just entertainment. Well, here's the thing. You can't just say it's entertainment. Entertainment comes in some kind of vehicle. It's not just a thing, right? You can't tell me, like, you want to simplify this? Say, you can't say to me, hey, entertain me. Well, what the hell does that mean? Right? You have to have a method, a vehicle to entertain somebody. Entertainment in and of itself is not a thing. It's not an activity. It's not a show. What is entertainment? What is WWE? World Wrestling Entertainment. And boy, wouldn't they love to get rid of that W, wouldn't they? Why don't they just become the World Entertainment? Just get rid of the other W. Just become the WE. Right? The Wii. Right? And yeah, I know there's a Wii network, like the Women's Entertainment Network or something on cable television. But if they could get rid of that other W, I'm sure they would. Because that's not what Vince would want to be a part of. That's not what Kevin Dunn clearly wants to be a part of. The production team, their vision, when they have the creative outlet and situational platform to do this, when things allow for it, like the pandemic we're going through, they have now taken this to a level that is flat out criminal to professional wrestling. Oh, pro wrestling's dead. No, it's not. What you see every week on television, outside of last night and outside of the Firefly Funhouse and all these cinematic, nonsensical, just presentations of what they think wrestling is, or entertainment is rather, that's pro wrestling. That's how you're entertained, is through wrestling. So that's when people say, oh, it's sports entertainment. Well, what exactly is sports entertainment? It's sports that entertain you. In this case, it's wrestling as a sport entertaining you, at least an attempt at it. So, you know, I thought I was going to come on here and yell and scream and shout. And last night, I almost did. I almost came on here last night and just put an explicit rating on this show and just went to the wall on this. But I wanted to sleep on it. And I wanted to take some time to really think about my response and see if my opinions changed at all overnight after calming down from what I saw. And while I have calmed down, my opinions haven't changed. It's just now a quiet disgust rather than a loud cussing disgust that would have happened had the mic turned on last night at about 11 o'clock at night. I almost did it, but I thought better of it. And again, I know some of you really like this. Like, for example, I got this this tweet to my response from last night, talking about how if you're a true wrestling fan, this has to disgust you. And somebody said, respectfully disagree, man. I've watched a lot of wrestling, but it was cinematic and comedic and exactly what I needed. I cried laughing. Yeah, this is serious. I cried laughing when Otis yelled, food fight. Sorry you didn't enjoy it, but I got a big smile from this. Well, You are right up WWE's soft little audience that loves to make sure they have a smile on their face. And everyone has their own sense of humor. I get it. Everyone's sense of humor is triggered by something different. And I understand that. So the fact that you found this funny and actually cried laughing when Otis said food fight, I honestly could not be at the further, at the other end of the spectrum than you, from you. You are my polar opposite in terms of what we find funny, right? And maybe our objectives looking at wrestling are different. Maybe our lenses in which we look at wrestling are different. Maybe you're just there to smile, have a good time, and just, you know, take whatever WWE feeds me and I'll be sitting happy, you know, with this big smile, giggling. And then there's fans like myself who hold WWE to a high standard, as we should, because they are taking our money on a monthly basis, the majority of them, for the WWE Network, and to pay our money to go see them in person at live events when that resumes, and to take our time up several hours a week. I should hold them to high standards. I don't go to wrestling events, nor do I watch wrestling to laugh. If it happens organically, great. Fine. But when comedy is intentionally put in professional wrestling, almost always it fails. But clearly there are fans out there that feel differently. If you actually cried laughing from Otis saying food fight, we have very, very different fundamental philosophies on what professional wrestling is and should be. If you guys want just like a cartoon, I mean, Saturday morning has a whole big lineup on Fox and CBS and all the basic cable networks. There's a whole bunch of cartoons, right? And when WWE does this, to me, it defines down the match, the importance, the performers, everything that is associated with it is defined down to me. I mean, really, from the very beginning, with all of the guys in the weight room fighting one another, and AJ Styles just can't get underneath that that weight that's about an inch from his chest. I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm not even here to nitpick on that. But all the guys fighting one another, why wouldn't you just run to the elevator, right? I mean, you're not there to beat each other up. You're there to grab a briefcase. And at one point, I do remember they were in, I don't know, some kind of room. Baron Corbin shows up and says, "I'm headed to the roof." Oh, okay. Well, if you're the Patriots defense and you go over to the, you know, say they're playing the Giants, and you just go, "Hey guys, here's my plan. I'm going to go do this next. So be ready." You might as well have done that. Do you audibly have to say, "I'm headed to the roof"? Isn't that where everyone's headed anyway? And furthermore, if you're in the room, why would you announce it at that moment that you're going to do that to your opponent so that they know what you're about to do? That's not an over-exaggeration. That's not a nitpick. It's pure stupidity. And, you know, I really can't put this on the performers. They are being told what to do, and they do what they're paid to do. And I get that. And so that was just one cardinal sin. I mean, you've got to be kidding me that you announce what you're going to do. Like, you could even say to some degree, you have Drew McIntyre announce before he's going to do his Claymore. He counts down. Basically, he yells it loud enough so his opponent can hear. You could say Shawn Michaels did the same thing with Sweet Chin Music. Why would you give your opponent a heads up about what you're going to do, right? You know, slamming his foot on the ground for Sweet Chin Music. So my point is, this match, especially with the women's division, you have the women with Asuka not there. They're all standing there at like the starting line of whatever that is. And she appears at the top on like some kind of small platform, a pillar above the women. And how do they not see her jumping down to splash on everybody? I'm at a loss. I really am. And Asuka using the elevator, I thought was smart. Get it. Makes total sense. That's what I hope someone would do, is use the damn elevator instead of fighting up the stairs and making sure that every room in the WWE headquarters is shown. And yeah, we got to see Vince McMahon's office, and oh my God, there's a T-Rex, you know, skeleton there. I don't know, who cares, right? I don't mean, really, who cares? It was funny to see Vince in there. Maybe that was the only bright spot of the whole thing, saying to get out. That was pretty funny. But then Daniel Bryan stops fighting. I mean, they just stop fighting, and they come out and they start arguing about who looked like a big wuss in front of Vince McMahon. I mean, there's no sense of urgency, right? There's no sense of urgency whatsoever among the competitors about something so valuable that we're told is worth so much, and that 80-some percent of the people that cash in win the championship, right? We're supposed to be told that, and yet these stars, these wrestlers, are told to execute this like it's community theater at your local civic center. That's the contrast here. Like, if I knew this was supposed to be a big joke, fine. But it's like WWE, who incessantly likes to, on an annual basis, have some kind of stupid-ass food fight, like it's the high school cafeteria every 4th of July, and sometimes Memorial Day. Picnic, Memorial Day picnic, 4th of July picnic. Everyone comes together in like a big, I don't know, big conference room, and just suddenly starts, you know, somebody drops something on somebody, and then it turns inevitably into a child's dream of a food fight. I'm just at a loss as to what they and why they think this is funny or entertaining. It's entertaining if I was to have a brain surgeon come in and just remove my brain completely. I may have just been able to sit there comatose and at least feel neutral about it, right? But I've basically turned heel to some of you right now of how much I despised what WWE did with the Money in the Bank ladder matches. I get it. Many of you love this thing. Many of you thought this was so entertaining and oh, it was so happy. It put a smile on my face. Since when is it the responsibility of a sports simulated company to make sure it smiles on your face all the time? Is this the Little Sisters of the Poor? Is this some kind of charity that WWE is suddenly? I don't understand why that's their mission, because it's such a nice sponsor friendly motto. I mean, is it the image that they're trying to warp of WWE? And don't even get me started on Stephanie McMahon's basically implanted promo or implanted input into this match. She wasn't even there. It was a clear copy, cut and paste into this match. It was embarrassing. Embarrassing. And then you get to the end of the match. They all finally make it up to the building. You knew that was going to happen. Had to have, right? But AJ Styles is fighting at the top of the ladder with Baron Corbin after Rey Mysterio was basically thrown off the top of the building. And then AJ Styles grabs the briefcase, and that should be it. That should be it. This isn't the Royal Rumble where your feet have to hit the floor. Since when in any other ladder match ever in the history of WWE has the winner only been declared when the person not just retrieves the belt or briefcase from the top of the ladder, but makes their way down and then touches their feet on the floor of the ring, on the mat? Never. The answer is never. So the fact that AJ Styles had the championship, and if he dropped it, well, he dropped it, but he retrieved it successfully. Are they going to go by NFL fumble rules? Did he make a football move? Or did he not have possession of the football and therefore it's a fumble? Is that the analogy WWE is going for? The fact is, AJ Styles retrieved it, he held it, and then he fumbled it. Even in NFL terms, that's a carry. Which means AJ Styles wins, which means Otis should not be carrying that briefcase. And I don't like Otis with that belt, that briefcase. I don't. I know that Vince has become enamored with Otis's facials, right? Vince is now on basically taking Otis as a pet project. He's the new flavor of the week for Vince. And I know he loves his facials. He loves the belly on him that he can just exploit how fat he is and that he loves to eat food and look at how gross he is. Let's have like meat hanging out of his mouth. How is that entertaining? Who are you? What audience are you serving? Children under the age of 5? I mean, there are grown adults that found this entertaining. I talked to some of you. I don't understand it. I do not understand this. It was a flat-out crime committed in broad daylight against professional wrestling. And don't tell me this isn't pro wrestling. Yes, it is. This is professional wrestling at its absolute worst. You took every aspect of what is terrible about 2020 professional wrestling and you stuck it all in one match. Implausibility. Cameras where they shouldn't be. I expected that. Nobody's bumped, bruised, or selling anything. Everyone's just kind of punching and kicking at random, right? Nobody's really selling a damn thing. People stop fighting out of nowhere. You have people announcing what they're going to do next to their opponents. You have Stephanie McMahon implanting herself in a cut-and-paste scenario. You have a silly-ass food fight that apparently every contender in both men's and women's matches decided was okay and more important that you make sure you get the pie in the face of somebody like, who was it? John Laurinaitis. I mean, you knew he was inevitably going to get a pie with People Power. I mean, that's not funny. I can't wait to hear what Jim Cornette says about this. I really hope to God that he saw this. I really do. I love the way he destroys stuff like this much better than I can. But I tend to agree more often than not with his analysis on these types of things. So it was a unmitigated embarrassment. I was embarrassed to be a wrestling fan for that match. That's a fact. That is a damn fact. It's a sad fact. And this isn't an attention grab. That's how I felt. I was angry and embarrassed. Because not just that WWE did this, but the fact that they actually got the support and the feedback from fans that they wanted this. They wouldn't have done it otherwise if they thought the fans didn't want it. So clearly, they got what they wanted from the reaction they were looking for from the Firefly Funhouse and the graveyard match. Boneyard, who gives a damn? It's graveyard match. And they got what they wanted to hear, and now they go, oh, we got it. Now let's go. Let's go. I can't wait until fans are back in the arenas so they can stop this crime against wrestling. That they can go back to normal. And someone said, oh, well, you can't present it everything the same way. You're right, you can't. But there are a million ways to present wrestling in the way that it should be. And then there's a few ways, just a few, that make it look embarrassingly bad. And WWE did all of that last night with their Money in the Bank ladder matches. I would love for somebody to tell me why in the hell this was entertaining to them. Especially if you're a longtime fan. If you're a new fan and you don't know any better, you just think, ha-ha, this is so funny. Look at these grown men and women throwing pies in each other's faces. I mean, seriously, that's what kids' shows do. Like, really. I mean, I have a son. This is the kind of stuff he watches and thinks is funny. And he's 2. I'm not kidding. I have no idea what audience they think they were serving. I have no idea what audience I think they were serving. And I was certainly not served. Well, let me redact that. I was served, but it was a big pile of dog crap. And it was the worst kind. It was like Vince was able to get into my head and go, okay, what is everything he hates about pro wrestling? Oh, well, we're not pro wrestling to begin with. Well, great. Let's give him the alternative version of what we want to be. And just sitting there rubbing his hands together. That's what it felt like. My worst nightmare as a wrestling fan come true. So that's my thoughts on the ladder matches. And I'm going to get to some positive stuff, guys. I do want to balance this out. Which, by the way, guys, you can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast if you're still following me. And honestly, if you unfollow me, flat, I don't care. I mean, if you unfollow me, that whatever. If you're offended by my opinion, again, we all have opinions. Those of you that are offended, I'm guessing, are also offended easily by other things. I don't, you know, whatever. That's your problem. But I got a very mixed reaction on Twitter. Many people lashed out. Many people supported. Feel like I'm in politics. It felt like a very political, controversial statement that I said last night. And but nonetheless, let's get to some positives. And some of the positives, let's get to it. Some of the things I really liked: Bayley retaining the women's championship. Loved it. I thought that was the right move. Bayley retaining is right now the right move for everyone. Tamina had, I think, a very good showing, probably the best showing of her career. Some sloppy moments, but Tamina, I think, was good to very good nonetheless. And so applause to Tamina. Hard-fought match. I love the reversal from the super kick to her submission. Very well done. Sasha helping out. There was no dissension that we all thought might be coming. So I really enjoyed that physical match. I could do without the thousands and thousands of super kicks that are done every single show. I mean, the number of super kicks done, I almost started to do a tally, and I lost track at 20, and I'm not kidding you. I just said I'm done with this. I mean, how a super kick is just a transitional move is mind-boggling considering what it actually is, right? But nonetheless, I really enjoyed the women's championship match with Tamina. Though Tamina can kind of like go by the wayside, or maybe she'll stick around. I mean, the women's division certainly needs a little bit of help, and especially in the depth category. And I think Tamina could easily be that depth. And maybe she sticks around, or maybe she just goes away in her hole and comes back out around Rumble time, and her and Nia Jax can have another face-off. I mean, I don't know. but so another thing I really like, I did like the R-Truth thing. You know, he has got, when I talk about comedy in WWE and comedy in general with wrestling, it's very rare to come across a guy that has the timing and is organically funny. Santino Morello was one, and R-Truth is another. I mean, those are the two that come to mind right away. And having R-Truth come out there and play like there's a crowd there was pretty funny. And then having Bobby Lashley come out just to basically plant him, wins the match. And then R-Truth gets backstage and starts to reminisce of the days of the 24/7 championship and how he's going to go to New England to sack Tom Brady to get it back. I mean, so he doesn't even know the name of the guy that actually has it. Obviously, Rob Gronkowski. So hopefully R-Truth retrieves the belt before they can bring it into the NFL, which I don't believe will ever happen. So I do expect R-Truth at some point in the next few weeks to month, get that back and so it can come back to WWE. I mean, you talk about a championship with less value than the 24/7 title. People that aren't even employees or independent contractors of WWE can win this thing. That's how much value this has. It's just, but nonetheless, R-Truth with it is a good fit. I don't even know how many reigns he's had at this point. I don't know the number. It's some egregious amount that he, as far as number of times that he's championed. So R-Truth was another bright spot, as he always is. And honestly, I would love to see him have one run with a major championship, even if it's the Intercontinental title. Doesn't have to be the top belt. But I think this guy has something left in the tank to offer. And the fans, I think, would get behind him very quickly because he's likable. He's been with the fans for a long time. He's got the charisma. He's got the energy. People naturally gravitate towards R-Truth. So I think he could have a hell of a run, maybe a Kofi Kingston story, just for like a six-month run as champion. Or even less, but give him that big moment before he rides off into the sunset. I really think they could capitalize on that, and the people would lose their minds if R-Truth became champion. I mean, just think about that. It's extremely I know WWE would say it's risky. I wouldn't say it is. This guy's beloved, but the fans know that he has a defined limit by WWE. They know that he is not in all likelihood going to win any major championship. So imagine the support if he gets close to winning one and or ends up winning one, the reaction to that. I think people would really embrace it. And I'm not saying that being sarcastic at all. I really believe that. So some other things I really liked as we try to balance out this show with some positives from all that negative that you may perceive it as at the beginning of the show was Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. You know, this wasn't a five-star classic, nor did we expect it to be, and that's fine. It was exactly what I thought it would be, and that's a good thing. They didn't do too much or too little. They teased Braun Strowman joining Bray Wyatt, and they teased it for a length of time that made you start to believe. And that was, I think, a good moment. It had me kind of on the fence because I said in my earlier show this week, I said, hey, this would be a hell of a turn, a twist, a swerve, if you will, of Braun Strowman joining Bray Wyatt. And it didn't happen. Bray Wyatt was duped into Braun Strowman's just believability that he was going to join him. And he ends up giving Bray the running power slam to retain the belt. And then you saw flashes on the face of Bray Wyatt of The Fiend. So that's fine. Oh, it's predictable. I don't care. I mean, not everything has to be predictable. But if predictability is the right thing to do, you know, I've always said that's the right thing to do. And I'd rather have it be predictable and the right thing. And it is. Having Braun Strowman face The Fiend next is logical. And I'm looking forward to that to see exactly what comes of that and how Braun is able to overcome The Fiend, if he's able to overcome The Fiend. I mean, there's always the possibility of The Fiend taking the belt back and maybe Braun truly does join him. We'll see, but that's clearly where they're headed next for Backlash. Those of you that maybe didn't know, in the next pay-per-view, as you saw in the pay-per-view on Money in the Bank last night, they announced Backlash is coming to, I think, June 15th, roughly, mid-June. And so another 4 weeks, which is nice. And then we get into Extreme Rules and then bam, SummerSlam. Yeah, that happened fast, right? So that's what's on the cards for the next month. So that's good. And maybe there'll be fans there. Who knows? So the other thing that I liked, boy, I'm on a roll, right, with all these like things that I like. Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins. This one, again, as we've said so many times, was robbed of a live audience. And it was interesting on a lot of levels because Seth didn't have any backup, number one. Where's his backup lately, right? Where is his backup? We don't know. We don't know. He needs some assistance here. And I know Murphy is part of his disciples group, but he needs more guys. And maybe AOP is on their way back shortly. I also love Seth Rollins' new music, by the way. Great. It also fits his change in character, his cadence, and his presence on air when he cuts a promo. It's no longer the Seth Rollins of old. It is the true Messiah type of presentation. So Seth is going all in here. I love what's happening. Even in the loss, which we expected Seth to lose, I like what he's doing with his character and where it's going as a presentation. It's believable. Seth is all in. I like it. Give me more. I mean, so that's how I feel about that. And what's weird is, you know, this match was great. I really enjoyed the match. I would love to see them again. The thing is, and Drew winning was the way it should have been, but Seth's on a losing streak here, and he shook the hand of Drew McIntyre at the end. That's curious, because Seth Rollins is on a heel run right now, a hot heel run. He's building himself back up after the loss after WrestleMania. And then he shakes the hand of a babyface. I'm not sure what to make of this. We might get more answers on Raw as it's being recorded as I speak. So the answer may be there already. Or nothing may come of it. I just don't know the purpose of that. That is not something you see often. A babyface extending an olive branch to the heel. And the heel accepts with no shenanigans. I'm not sure. Again, it's a very unique set of circumstances because it very rarely happens in that way. Typically, the heel would do that to the babyface, and the babyface would be suckered in because he's the nice guy, and then they get pounded down for being gullible. So It's just interesting because I don't want Seth as a babyface right now, if that's what this was hinting towards. I don't need that. We don't want that. So hopefully that's not the direction that they were going. So that's, and honestly, if they end up turning Seth back babyface, it's possible. I wouldn't do it for, honestly, many months or years. I mean, he is a natural born heel, as we all know. The babyface run never worked. And, so hopefully that's not the case, that this is a hint towards that. And what I will say, one last thing, and then I'm going to close it out here, is Asuka winning. I actually don't hate Asuka winning. I thought Shayna was still the right choice. She was honestly nowhere to be found in this match. Like, she was kind of forgotten about. After she was breaking people's arms, she just kind of faded into the background of this match, and it was a bit startling that they brought Asuka back to the forefront, which is kind of strange given that Asuka was just challenging Becky numerous times before WrestleMania for her championship. So whether Asuka cashes in when Becky's champion or not, of course, is a story that is yet to be told. But with the story dictating that Asuka could challenge Becky at any time, it's just kind of like, oh, well, we've been there, done that. Shayna would have been a better pick for that particular scenario. And I know that it's probably understood that people thought Shayna was going to win, so they maybe didn't do that. But I don't know why WWE at times will just shake things up when it's not the right decision. Maybe that's not what they did here. But to me, Shayna was the right choice. I'm not sad or mad about Asuka. I think Asuka is really starting to gain a lot of momentum as a character and gain TV time on a regular basis, and her like kind of her animations and her promos are wacky. She's kind of coming into her own after Kairi Sane and her unceremoniously have disbanded. And so this could be the rebirth of Asuka. Let's hope so. All right, well, guys, I just want to give you my quick thoughts on Money in the Bank. I can go into more depth, and I probably will tomorrow with maybe a co-host. I think I have somebody in mind that I might bring on to discuss Raw, and of course, more on Money in the Bank and get their opinion on Money in the Bank. But I wanted to give you guys my thoughts because I could not hold them in any longer. I needed to do a separate show. You got one, and like it or not, there it is. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. You can hit me up on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can go to WWEPodcast.com or any podcast app and download and subscribe. It really would help us out. You can leave us a rating and review. God almighty, I can imagine the reviews now, but whatever. You can do that at any podcast app, and particularly Apple, it does help. So thank you guys for joining the show. I'll be back again tomorrow with a more in-depth look at Money in the Bank with a co-host, and also a Monday Night Raw review, Wednesday's Nostalgia, Thursday, Friday, AEW, NXT, and then this weekend comes the weekend review. So a lot more audio coming your way, and just stay tuned. There's so much more to come. Thank you guys for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWEPodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.